From the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the G and Ursula Show with G. Scott and Ursula Voitine.
That's right. It's Fresh Fridays here on the G and Ursula Show. And Ursula is sitting there saying, I know you're going to say it, G. I know you know I'm going to say it. Mm-hmm. You know I'm going to bring it up. So I was back there getting coffee. And Ursula, by the way, she's a coffee drinker these days. She's been back there drinking coffee. So
it's true.
So check this out. Ursula goes to warm up something in the microwave, gets it all heated up, and she gets it out of the microwave, opens it up, takes it out, closes it, and leaves. And what does she do? She left 18 seconds on the microwave. Now, I want to ask you, does it bother you when people in your house or at work leave time on the microwave? Ursula?
Okay. I'm going to defend myself.
Okay.
And you know, at the top of the hour, we only have a couple of minutes.
Okay.
And during those couple of minutes, not only do I have to set up and get ready for the next segment.
Okay.
I have to do whatever business I have to do. And this time we have a guest and I wanted to bring him some hot water for tea.
Mm.
I actually like to be in my seat with a few seconds left over before I actually have to turn on the mic and start. Some of us like to come in and slip in and make their co-host really nervous. No, I like to be ready. So, yeah, I left 18 seconds on the microwave.
Brian in Bellevue says, yes, so annoying. I didn't know that. And it bothers people. All right, Ursula.
Okay.
What we got, my friend?
What's new at 10?
Well, a lot of you have been asking, hey, where's Michael Medved? Because we usually have him on Fridays,
right.
But he hasn't been with us for the last couple of weeks. We've just not been able to connect. He is on a flight this morning, but we were thrilled to find out that another friend of the show is able to join us, and his name is Dr. Jason Johnson. He is an author. He's an MSNBC contributor. He's also a political scientist who teaches at Morgan State, and he's with us this morning. Good morning.
I am very, very humbled to be sitting in the place, the time space of Michael Medved, who
yes.
I've been listening to since I was a kid.
There
and that's
go.
Not an insult. Like, I remember the days when I was a kid, it was like Dr. Laura, Michael Medved, and Rush Limbaugh.
Yes.
So, yeah. So I'm very excited to be here. I will have completely different opinions than him
exactly.
on everything.
Exactly.
But I'm happy to be in the spot.
With Michael, we always manage to find some kind of common ground. And regardless of whether we agree or not, we walk away still friends. And that's the beautiful thing about it. So we need to start with the biggest story in the country right now, which is what's going on college campuses. I don't know if anything's happening at Morgan State.
No. We don't have anything major going on at Morgan State right now. This is the thing, and I say this all the time, and I say this with a tremendous amount of respect, okay? First and foremost, when we have conversations about what's happening on college campuses, there's like thousands upon thousands of campuses
Correct.
In this country.
Yes.
And like the news focuses on like 12, right? Guess what? It is the end of April. It is the end of April, early May. You know what my students are worried about? Finals.
Uh-huh.
Internships.
Graduation. Yes.
Okay. So this sort of projection sometimes that our campuses across America are completely disrupted by all this chaos is just, it's not true. It's not how most campuses are. And that's not a reflection of whether people care about the issues. It's a reflection of like how widespread these protests really are.
But there are dozens of campuses where hundreds of students have now been arrested.
Right.
And some colleges have maybe agreed to some of their requests, at least to look. One
right.
of them in our state, a very liberal college called Evergreen State University.
Mm-hmm.
They've joined University of Minnesota, Brown, and Northwestern in agreeing to meet at least some of the demands of these student protesters. I just want to hear your take, though, as you see young people and what they're passionate about and what they're doing and occupying. What is your position on that? And what's an argument in favor of what they're doing? And then where does it go too far?
Well, I think the primary concern that any faculty member has, any faculty member should have, right, is safety. Safety is the number one thing. I don't care which side of the issue you're on. Everybody should feel safe. So if you are protesting, you should be protected by your campus or by security. If you are counter-protesting, you should be protected by your campus or security. If you're outside a campus and you're protesting, the city cops should be protecting you. Safety is the number one concern. So anytime I hear reports about anybody being hit, anybody being physically assaulted or anything else like that, that is the thing that I think should be people's primary concern. But here's the important thing to understand. Safety is not the same thing as being comfortable. Okay, I don't have a right to be comfortable. There can be people protesting things that I don't like. There could be people taking positions I don't like. But my comfort and my safety are two different things. And I always use this example. I don't know if you guys remember this, but you know, back in the 90s, Ann Arbor, Michigan, right? University of Michigan, blah, 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 Wolverines. In the 90s, there was an annual Klan march that used to happen in downtown Ann Arbor, Michigan. Every single year, several hundred Klans people would march through a college town. Now, did people feel comfortable with that? No, they didn't. But they felt safe, right? And that's the key thing. And it's funny, there was an instance where things got a little violent. The counter-protesters to the Klan started chasing the Klan members. And there's this famous story of a woman named, she's in her 40s now, named Keisha Thomas. There's this amazing picture, I think it won a Pulitzer, of her throwing her body, young black woman, she was in high school at the time, throwing her body on the top of a Klansman to protect him from being hit by counter-protesters. Because she's like, look, you can't beat goodness into people, right? So I always use that as an example of like, hey, look, you don't have to agree with people who are marching. You don't have to agree with people sitting in any space. But as long as you respect their physical safety, we're in good shape.
So do you think the protest on these 12 campuses out of the thousands mm-hmm. on in the United States, do you think they're working?
So here's the funny thing about working, right? It depends on what your goal is. Here's the thing. I showed my students at Morgan State University because I was trying to find like good pop culture examples of like on campus protests. Everybody has these, you know, fantasy mythological versions of what happened in the 60s and 70s. And they forget that there's a whole lot of people who in the 60s and 70s who weren't protesting either. They were just going to lunch and going to campus, right? Everybody likes to pretend. I will never forget this. I remember saying this like 20 years ago when you had a bunch of Republicans talk about like Martin Luther King. I swear to God, you would think that the March on Washington was nothing but white Republicans with the number who've claimed that they were there, right? It's like, no, we've seen the pictures. Everybody doesn't get involved in activism, right? So when you look at the number of people who are involved and what they tend to ask for, you can't really determine if they're successful or not unless you look at the individual campuses. Some campuses are like, hey, I want you to, you know, some protesters are like, I want you to pull out of this. Well, okay, maybe the school will agree to it, right? Like we have a local school here in Washington. And some students are asking for, we want a complete change in curriculum. Or maybe that's not going to happen, right? It depends on your university. It depends on the institutional responsibility. So I'm always iffy about telling protesters, oh my God, what you're doing isn't working. Because very rarely does the protest in the moment elicit the change you want. It's usually months, sometimes years down the road.
Yeah, the part that I start to lose my sympathy is when it gets to points like violence or right. trashing buildings
yeah.
or, well, we talked about it here, blocking I-5. At some point, your rights to free speech are infringing on my rights to be able to travel. And at that point, you lose me. And I get it where you say, well, you know, sometimes you're not comfortable. But I mean, I have a point to where I'm like, OK, that.
See, I'm different on that. And I think about the protests across the country when Trump tried to push through the Muslim ban. Right. And there were people who were basically occupying airports. Now, that inconvenienced a lot of people, right? Famously, you know, formerly of ESPN's Sage Steele was like, this is terrible, blah, blah, blah. People say this stuff all the time. But here's the issue, right? At the end of the day, your protest and your occupation or the space that you take up should be directly related to the thing that you're concerned about, right? So if your issue is, hey, there's a Muslim ban that's keeping people from coming into this country, then going to the places where people can no longer come into the country makes sense. Like protesting at an airport makes sense to me, right? Going and inconveniencing a whole bunch of people at Starbucks because you're mad about this, that, or the other, I don't know that that makes sense. But then again, I'm not one of the organizers. And I do think there's a certain amount of inconvenience that we have to have in this country in order for people to make a point one way or another. Again, and I don't necessarily have to agree with that. I'll also add this, because I think this is important when we're talking about students. Here's the thing about a little history lesson. So we all know Martin Luther King, right? And we all know Medgar Evers. We all know the famous people. What happened to all the famous people who were activists in the mythological age of the 60s? Oh, they all got killed. Mm. They all got killed. They got killed by the very same people who are on TV today trying to tell us, oh, my God, they were so great. No, you murdered those people, right? So what you see with modern day activism is it's very decentralized. They don't want a big charismatic leader, man or woman, because they're like, if that person gets discredited or that person gets killed, then the movement falls apart. Because of that, that's how you have splinter groups going off and doing things that other groups don't agree with, right? Like, my understanding is that the students who were initially occupying space at Columbia, it was an offshoot group that took over the Hamilton building. Like, they were like, hey, that's not us, right? But when you don't have central leadership, that's what happens.
Like, everybody, a bunch of different factions within, you know, this large group of protesters.
Everybody can say Black Lives Matter. I mean, it's not a membership badge, right? So some people in Black Lives Matter did terrible stuff and others didn't.
Yeah. All right. Let's get to the next one. Right now, the poll's saying, and by the way, lately, I steal your thunder. I got it from you when you always say, these polls ain't loyal.
These polls ain't loyal.
Yeah, I learned that. I take that.
You used that on me.
Yes.
I said this last poll showed that Trump is leading Biden or you know, by a few percentage points.
Right. And
CNN poll.
And I stole that, your little saying.
Thank you.
So let me go ahead and throw it back to you. Right now, the polls are saying that Trump is, in some of them, neck and neck. And some of them are saying that Trump is leading current President Biden. Your thoughts?
Oh, please. Okay, look, I keep saying this. Above and beyond, these polls ain't loyal. You have to look at what makes a poll valuable, right? Here's the thing. If I show you guys a poll today that says 99% of Americans are happily married and proud of their kids, is that news? No, nobody cares about that. You know, everybody's like, yeah, okay, fine. People like their kids. But if I show you a poll that says 99% of Americans, you know, are disappointed in their sons, oh, now that's a segment, right? News that makes people anxious, polls that make people anxious, polls that seem like outliers are what makes the news. Mm. It is way more interesting to say, ooh, Donald Trump might win, than it is to say, actually, it's pretty statistically tied. The momentum has been with Joe Biden for about 2 or 3 months now. And for all practical purposes, is if you look at most of the indicators as to how somebody ends up doing in a presidential election, Joe Biden probably wins. Now, it's May. That could change. Yes. It's 8,000 months away. But if you ask me as a political scientist, not somebody at a small polling firm who's trying to hawk my poll so I can get on TV and have people talk about me, I would say, again, mostly a statistical dead heat, especially in the most critical states. And here's one of the biggest indicators for everybody who's having this argument. Here's one of the biggest indicators as to who's going to end up winning a presidential election. You look at off-year special elections. And the last couple of special elections, Democrats keep winning. You saw they just had a special election, was it Mississippi? And they won by like 25 points. Why? Because people don't like what Republicans did about abortion. Trump has never had to run against abortion. Trump has never had to run against January 6th. Trump has never had to run against, you know, a non sort of COVID economy. So, again, could Joe Biden lose? Of course he can. He's made plenty of mistakes that drive me nuts.
What are those?
Well, first off, I think that he's done a lousy job in talking about voting rights. I mean, we've been talking about this for 4 or 5 years now. It's like, hey, could you do something? And his Justice Department has tried. He has not been aggressive enough about it. I think he's been doing a terrible job in discussing what's happening on campus protests right now. I really do. I think you need to have a much more centrist perspective on these issues. I think you need to respect the people who are unhappy and discomforted with these protests. And I think you need to speak to the young people who are very passionate about these protests. And I don't think he's done a very good job of that. You don't have to make everybody happy. It's not your job. But the idea is you should have both sides equally unhappy with you. And that's not what he's been doing. Okay. Like that's the problem. The other thing that I think he has absolutely failed to do is make it clear how dangerous the circumstances are that we're facing. A couple months ago when he was like, oh, you know, I dare Donald Trump to come to the White House and work out an immigration deal with me. Dude, are you serious? The man's been like indicted 50,000 times. He led an army trying to take over the country who tried to hang Mike Pence. Why are you treating any of this as if you're running against a regular party? You know, this is Papa Smurf running against Gargamel. This is Superman running against Lex Luthor. Yeah, well, you know, Lex Luthor created a death ray to murder everybody in Metropolis, but you're acting like we're going to have a reasonable debate. Stop acting like a regular politician and realize that you have to be a wartime consigliere, and that's how you need to talk about this stuff. I think he's failed.
Okay, speaking of, he says he would be ready and willing to debate Trump. Is that a good idea?
I think it's necessary for the body politic. I think we should have debates. I don't think there's much value to it at this point. You've got two incumbents. Who the hell doesn't know how they feel? Anyway, by the way, anybody who says they're undecided is a liar.
Well, what about the folks who say they are considering someone like an RFK? Who does he hurt more?
The numbers say that he ends up hurting Trump more than he ends up hurting Biden. But here's the thing. When RFK inevitably drops out, and I think he probably will, I don't think those people are going to go back to Trump. I think they're just going to stay at home. If you're voting for RFK, then you really would find Trump disgusting, and you definitely don't want to vote for Joe Biden. So you're not just going to go. It's like if you're voting for Cornel West, right? You're not going to turn around and say, well, I guess I'll go for Biden now. No, you're just going to stay home.
Okay. God forbid, should something happen to President Biden, and of course, we don't ever want to think of that possibility. You know, who would be next in line? It would be Kamala Harris,
yes,
the vice president. And something happened this week, and I have to get your take on it, because she was invited to be on Drew Barrymore's show. And this is one question that has just made social media. I mean, it has lit it on fire.
I've been thinking that we really all need a tremendous hug in the world right now.
Yeah.
But in our country, we need you to be Mamala of the country.
Okay, I will say that the vice president was extremely gracious. But I wanted to. This is her chance to basically let the world know a little bit more about her. And she has asked this question.
It's like we have international events that need to be handled, domestic events and concerns, all sorts of important issues, immigration, police violence, health care. And you have the vice president in front of you, and you basically do, you know, what the world needs now is hugs. No! What is wrong with you? Goodness gracious. Can I just say that, like, I want to put out a moratorium on people pretending to be journalists right now. Like, I don't care if it's Drew Barrymore. I don't care if it's Shannon Sharp. I don't care if it's Stephen A. Smith. I am so sick and tired of people who don't really know the power of their microphone. Having important people in front of them and asking them idiotic questions. We all do it, but goodness gracious, Mamala, she's not there to give you a hug. This woman is here to possibly run the country if the man running the country's ticker doesn't work. Goodness gracious.
Okay, so here's my thought.
How did that 20 minutes just go that fast?
We can't let him leave. You got okay. Look,
I can stick around.
All right, Ursula,
I'll answer some calls. I'm happy to.
Yes.
What do you want to talk about next, Ursula? With Dr. Johnson here. Whatever you, it's your call.
You know what? Let's discuss that during the break, and we'll continue this conversation.
Yeah. So Dr. Jason Johnson is going to stay. I wonder if he's going to stay for scenarios too.
Ooh. We'll do that next, Jen Ursula.
This hour of the G and Ursula Show is brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors.
This is the G and Ursula Show on a fresh Friday, and we got so much positive response on our text line and on our G and Ursula Show Facebook page about our guests, so we decided to continue this conversation with Dr. Jason Johnson, MSNBC contributor and political science associate professor at Morgan State, and also an author.
Yes.
You have so many things going for you.
And a podcaster. That's why I'm here this weekend for the Crosscut Festival. Yes.
There
smart.
You go.
He's the smartest dude that I argue with on a regular basis.
Okay. So you got a lot of love, but you got some people also disagreeing and saying, wait a minute. Mm-hmm. Stop calling us liars when we say we are uncommitted. There are no qualified candidates. This is from 425. There are no qualified candidates for president, and we will not vote based on a party view, as both parties are horrible for different reasons. You say that anyone who says they're not going to or uncommitted right now maybe is there not is, really that uncommitted.
There is a massive difference between being uncommitted and undecided.
Okay.
Those are two different things.
Okay.
Right? Because I could say I'm not committed to my significant other. It doesn't mean I've decided if I'm going to see her on Friday. Right? I'm just not committed. Right?
Analogy that I got to think deeply about.
That's what we really vibe on today.
Right. Right. So when people say uncommitted, yeah, there's plenty of people who have voted uncommitted during the Democratic primary. That doesn't mean they're undecided if you ask them and tie them on a railroad track and say, hey, who are you going to vote for? And here's the thing. You have, Ursula, you've got two incumbents basically running against each other. You know how you feel about Joe Biden. You know how you feel about Donald Trump. You may be deciding whether or not you're going to vote, but if you are going to vote, you don't not know who you're going to vote for. And I have always felt that about people. You've heard me say this before. You've heard of Bear Munchausen syndrome?
Yes.
Right. It's where people, you know, try to pretend that they're sick or make their children sick because it gets them attention. Every time I hear about undecided, I call it political Bear Munchausen syndrome. Because if you say, oh my God, I'm undecided, I don't know what my vote is, then they're going to put you on a podcast, and they're going to put you on TV, and you're going to be in a focus group, and you get there and twiddle your fingers and you get free food. No, you probably know how you're going to vote. But by saying you don't know how you're going to vote, everybody wants to pay attention to you. All I got to do is look at your past voting behavior, ask you a couple of questions about what you perceive about the economy, who your family voted for, and probably one or two words. I used to say this all the time. 20 years ago, if you said we went into Iraq, and I just asked the question, do you consider it to be a part of the war on terror or an invasion of Iraq? And people say war on terror. Oh, you'll vote for Bush. Your words define what you view the world as. Mm. And so to pretend that you are undecided is just a way of trying to get attention.
Wow. I agree with you on that. I think that someone right now, they might say, I don't know which one I want to vote for between Donald Trump and President Joe Biden. The reason why I don't believe that, because this isn't one of those Mitt Romney against Barack Obama.
Yeah.
Now, that is more of a, okay, I'm undecided. Why? Because their politics were kind of similar back then when they were running.
Mm-hmm.
When you're talking about Donald Trump and President Joe Biden.
Right.
I mean, it's not even close. You know, there is no close when it comes to that.
Right.
All right. I want to get to this next thing. And this is a topic that wasn't planned. But since Ursula brought it up, she brought up the whole mamala that was cringy that came up from Drew Barrymore. Let's talk about the VP. Kamala Harris.
Yeah, you'll be in trouble now. we're negotiating to get her husband on my podcast, Word on Slate, so I'm going to be very careful about what I say.
We are truth tellers on this show, as painful as it might be.
So this is the G and Ursula Show.
Yes.
And I know, see, people just think that you're a contributor on MSNBC and you must think this way. I'm going to tell you right now, this is someone that I argue with about topics.
Mm-hmm.
Vice President Kamala Harris. Go.
I think that she's been in a really difficult position. I mean, like, objectively, you could watch like all five seasons of Veep, and that's be a pretty good indicator as to what her position is, because she's been saddled by a president who's made a lot of decisions or used a lot of rhetoric that I don't think her office necessarily agrees with. But you have to be aligned with your boss. You have to be aligned with the president. I think that she is an incredible one-on-one retail politician. And I tell people this all the time. I've met Senator Harris a lot of times. I've met Senator Harris when I was in a green room, when I was nobody that she should care about. And the next time I ran into her was 2 months later, and she asked me how my mother was doing, because I literally had mentioned the fact that I was going to see my mother, who was in the hospital. One-on-one, she's incredibly charming and charismatic. The same thing people used to say about Al Gore. Everybody thought Gore was boring. He was boring in public. Yeah. But you talk to the guy, he was super warm and super friendly. And that's the thing with Harris. She comes off as cringy for a lot of people.
Yeah, for some reason she forgets how to talk when she's speaking in public.
Right, and I've heard her move the crowd. I just don't think she does it consistently enough, and I think it's because she's had a really hard time being her true self under this administration. It's nothing to do with qualifications. It's always, of course, influenced by our lens of sexism and racism and gender and how we view those sorts of things. But at the end of the day, I think she's in a tough position. And I'll say this, you know, objectively, I can say this as a political scientist. If she hadn't been made VP, she wasn't ever going to win the White House. And I don't think she could beat a field of most of the potential Democrats that she would face. But that doesn't mean that she hasn't been a good vice president. A lot of vice presidents wouldn't necessarily be in a position to take up the banner if their boss had to step down.
Mike Pence.
Mike Pence would never have gotten elected.
Right, right. Yeah. So that's to your point.
Yeah, yeah. Nobody liked him.
Right.
You know, Joe Biden, I mean, he pulled it off because he was running against an absolutely terrible person in a once-in-a-century global pandemic. But I don't think Joe Biden would have been the greatest candidate. I mean, Joe Biden probably could have beaten Trump in 2016, too. But, you know, it's very, very difficult to be Senator Harris. And when you get asked dopey questions like that, and again, I don't know what's up with Drew Barrymore. She ain't been right since Charlie's Angels. I don't know why.
She
I don't know why
she's on the laps of her guests.
Right.
I mean, she's really got, it's part of her.
It's baby reindeer. I want to crawl up inside of you.
Did
right?
you see that?
Oh, my God. Yes. Oh, it was insane.
Baby reindeer.
Oh,
intense.
Yes.
OK, I'm going to ask you the same question that I asked Michael Medved. Are we going to see a woman president in our lifetime?
Yeah, I figure I've got another 40, 50 years on this planet. It'll happen eventually. I mean, I don't know what the circumstances are going to be.
So hope springs eternal.
Yeah, hope springs eternal. It's going to happen. It's going to happen.
Oy. All right. So we got one more segment in this 11 o'clock hour.
Cool.
And on this segment, we call it, this next one's called Scenarios, right? And we read someone's, what they wrote.
Okay.
And we all get to weigh in on it. So basically, we're judging other people's lives.
Okay.
So you okay with that?
Yeah. Do we play the Tribe Called Quest song before we go into it?
Oh, no.
Yes. That would be great. That would be great to play if we go in. That would be awesome.
Hold on. The fact that you called that, yes, we actually do.
Yeah.
All right. Coming up next, Dr. Jason Johnson's going to hang out with us. You know what time it is. Scenarios next. Gene Ursula.
Scenarios is brought to you by 1-800-DUI-AWAY.
Okay, before we get to Scenarios, Dr. Jason Johnson, you are in Seattle. Tell us why.
I am here for the Ideas Festival, the Crosscut Festival, which will be throughout the weekend. I'm going to be interviewing Ta-Nehisi Coates on Saturday. They've got David Hogg here, you know, who's the big, you know, gun advocate, you know, gun safety advocate. You've got just tons of brilliant people here. I'm also talking about my podcast, my Slate podcast, A Word. It's been going for 2 years now. We have fantastic conversations in this week, and I'm going to be talking about this weekend. The end of April marks the 10-year anniversary of the Flint crisis.
Oh.
It's been 10 years. They still don't have clean water.
That's unbelievable.
And I have an amazing conversation with the journalists who are there. People are still getting brown water. You have education issues, kids with ADD. It's affecting pipes, property values. So it's a really important story to listen to. So I encourage everybody, check out my podcast, A Word on Slate. It drops every single Friday. We talk to everybody from deep, dark issues like this to Leslie Jones to Larry Wilmore and David Alan Greer. But we always have a good time.
All right. There it is.
I love it. I'm going to say one thing. Hmm. I love your voice.
Thank you.
You got it's a great radio voice.
Thank you so much.
It's crisp. Scenarios. We vacationed with my parents at a nice Airbnb a few weekends ago. I took my family and paid for all of my family's expenses, and my parents did the same thing. We split the cost of the house. While there, my mom carelessly handed my 3-year-old a tall glass of grape juice while my child stood on a white carpet. I'm sure you know how this went. We tried to wash the stain out, but it didn't work. Last night, I got the bill for the carpet. They are charging us $2,500 to replace the carpet. After what I spent on this family vacation, the last thing I needed was an additional bill. I say my mom is responsible and my parents should pay for it all, but at least half. My husband says we can't do that because our kid dropped it and we should have been watching him. What do I do here? 888-973-5476 is the Muckleshoot Casino Resort text line. Ursula, you have to bat first.
Unless mom offered to pay for it, I would tend to agree with the husband in this case. It happened while caring for the child, and accidents happen, and that is your responsibility. You know going in, you're renting it, you've got a toddler. Yeah, unfortunately, they had grape juice. That is a bad stain. I would just call it good, pay for it, and just suck it up.
Dr. Johnson, what you got?
Look, you get your purple stuff, Coke, Sunny D. Why do you even have Welch's in the house? Okay, if you've got a white carpet, so I don't know why you would have even bought that.
Exactly.
Look, ultimately, 99% of the time, a mess that your child makes is your responsibility. Yeah. But since she was being cared for by family, it wasn't like an au pair. I think you should be split 50-50.
Okay.
Mom should cover it all. Here's the deal. Here's the deal, because I have a 3-year-old that lives with grandma, and you know what grandma never allows? Grandma never allows the kids to eat grape popsicles on the white couch. I guarantee you, grandma would not have given the 3-year-old grape juice in her own home. She's fully aware of the consequences of what could happen. She just chose to ignore it because she's at a rental property. Pony up.
Yeah, for sure. Mom, mother-in-law, she at least has to go half on this. Absolutely.
So how are you going to have that conversation? You can just say, look, you gave the juice. You pay
you
for
are
it.
The idiot.
No, I know how you guys are. You know what?
Yeah.
You
tell me.
Here's how it's going to go. I'm so glad you talked about this. If they don't offer,
yes,
as a parent, I'm just going to have to pay for it.
That's what I said.
Because there are some family structure out here where you do not even fix your mouth to come at mama. Because what's going to happen is it's going to be like, you want me to pay half?
Yeah, I'm not going to watch your kid again.
Okay, you know what? Yeah. Put this on the record. So just be careful. Now, there's some of you all that want to go talk stuff to the mama. There's some families that can't. You cannot. If they offer, great. If they don't, you're paying. So you're right, Ursula.
Whose name was on the rental?
I say you ask, and if they say no, they say no.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, like, you don't take offense to it, but if they say no, they say no.
At least let them know. Dr. Jason, I'm in agreement. At least let them know. Ooh,
yeah, we got hit with a $2,500 bill.
$2,500.
Yeah.
Maybe mom says, oh, gosh, you know, I'll pay for half of it. I'll help you pay for that, or I'll pay for it.
And if they
don't go.
If they don't. You're like, oh, yeah,
I'm good.
I'm just telling you about it.
Because you know what? You're going to spend more than $2,500 to get a babysitter to come with you the next vacation. So it ends up working out.
So, yeah, yeah. All right, Nick, what you got, bro?
Look, I know this is a case where you got to get the carpet cleaner and have the pro take care of it, but you got to teach the kid a lesson before they let the problem go away. Maybe half and half is probably the best option for the adults, but have the kid who made the mess, quote, clean the mess and roll their sleeves back, get down on the carpet and start scrubbing before you bring the pros in. I would just say, yeah, the problem with the bunny is just the adult stuff. But yeah, the kid's probably been taken care of by both sides. Let's put it that way.
Ah, good stuff. Before Dr. Jason Johnson leaves, one of the things politically, we pretty much see eye to eye. But his athletic sports takes are the worst. Absolute worst. The Seahawks, who he is a big fan of the Seattle Seahawks, they have a new coach in Mike McDonald right now. How do you think that this is going to go this year and beyond?
I told you I'm not optimistic. And you and I have talked about this all the time. I was calling for Pete Carroll to get fired 3 years ago.
Oh,
I think I thought his offense was non-existent. It was archaic. He was depending on Russell's athleticism to make up the fact that he couldn't come up with anything more original than a 1992 offense. But now you've got Mike McDonald, who was defensive coordinator. He only has 1 year under the Ravens. It's not like they were world breakers at the time. I have no idea what the future looks like. You got to build a culture with the Seahawks. I don't know if this guy's a culture builder, and I really don't want to see the Hawks cycling out of coaches every 2 or 3 years. We got to pay DK. We got to play some of our other receivers. We are in a major transition moment, and I'm not sure if I trust who's at the head.
That's a hot take.
You heard what he said, though. This whole Pete Carroll thing, he used to drive me nuts.
We never agreed on it.
Okay, got to ask you one more question. Former quarterback Russell Wilson, can he ever come back to Seattle and
be... y'all got to see, G is leaving the room.
G just walked out the studio and welcomed, and does he get a spot in the stadium?
I have seen athletes who are much, much, much more controversial be welcomed back. I've seen Michael Vick get welcomed back in Atlanta, right? And there were people who hated him. I think Russell be fine. I also guess, quite frankly, with him and Mike Tomlin has always wanted a black quarterback after dealing with Rears with that questionably ethics person, Ben Roethlisberger. I think they're going to have a much warmer relationship than Russell's probably ever had with a coach. It'll be very interesting to see how that plays out.
Dr. Jason Johnson, make sure you check out his podcast on Slate. What's it called again?
It's called A Word with Jason Johnson on Slate.
Every Friday. Hey, we appreciate your time, brother.
Thanks, man. Anytime.
All right. Agree to disagree next, Jen.
Come on and get down on it.
Get down on it.
While you're dancing.
Get down on it.
Get down on it.